This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hello, and welcome back to Outward, Slate's podcast about everything LGBTQ. I'm Pala Shah, Outward's lead producer, and typically, I'm in the end credits, not behind the mic. But this week, I'm stepping in for Jules and Brian for a very special Valentine's Day episode. My credentials? Well, I'm a queer lesbian, certified lover girl with a Libra Venus and a Libra Rising, and a former florist. So this holiday is my bread and butter. You can ask my girlfriend or your local astrologer. And what better way to explore queer love in all of its forms than with poetry? The joy and suffering of yearning, of waxing poetic about unrequited love, articulating deeply felt, overwhelming desire, it's all built into the fabric of queerness. We know intimately the barriers to loving freely that exist, that have existed, and poetry has always been there to express it all. Whether it's the letters that come from the long-distance romances we're known for, or the poetry of a short personals ad. Horny gay poets and writers across history have given us so much, and it's only right that we honor that history this Valentine's Day. Today, I'll be talking to Saray Jarrell Johnson, a poet and writer based in New York. Saray's first collection of poetry, Slingshot, won the Lambda Literary Prize for Poetry in 2020, and his second collection, Watch Night, out this spring, won the 2023 James Laughlin Award. He was a founder of the literary journal Deaf Poets Society and the inaugural Brooklyn Public Library Poet in Residence. His work has appeared in the New York Times and Yale Review, among other publications. Saray is also a part of the organization Sins Invalid, a disability justice-based performance project that celebrates artists with disabilities, centralizing artists of color and queer artists. We'll hear some of Saray's poems and chat about the particular romance of queer love. But you should know, we'll be hearing poems that get a little erotic. So if you're not wearing headphones, here's your heads up. We'll get into it all after the break.
The new Starz series, Marianne George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but shockingly, it is. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villiers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. You've never seen a mother-son duo like this before. The show is full of wit, scandal, action, and did I mention Julianne Moore? Something this audacious and sexy is as genre-bending as it gets. You won't be able to look away. Watch the season premiere of Marianne George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda. Whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch, find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back. I'm now joined by poet Saray Jarrell Johnson. Happy Valentine's Day, Saray.
Happy Valentine's Day, Palace. How are you?
I'm good. Do you celebrate Valentine's Day?
Oh boy, do I ever. I love Valentine's Day. I am like a pink and white and red type of girly. I love that. For me, I'm also a Pisces, so I feel like this is when I really feel the Pisces season brewing in my life.
Definitely. How do you like to celebrate?
Well, it is a day that I, in the traditional style, like I like a romantic dinner. I like a very lavish dessert. I like a lobster situation. I really love Valentine. I'd like to put on a early aughts, late 90s romantic black comedy, you know, on Tubi probably, and just really snuggle down.
Yeah, I have too many Libra placements to not love Valentine's Day, so I'm in the same boat. Do you have like any hot takes on queering Valentine's Day at all? A little outside the traditional?
Do I have any hot takes on queering Valentine's Day? You know, I think that romantic love has its own queerness anyway. Like, I very much appreciate, I'm on TikTok. I'm a millennial of TikTok. And I think it's very interesting, like, the takes on romance and, like, why we have romance at all, right? Like, if traditionally love or marriage is an economic proposition, the idea that relationships would be about love to me is already a little bit queer. And I also think that any opportunity to be a queer in love is just a nice opportunity. As a gay person, as a, like a trans person, it's like there are so many obstacles to love. So any opportunity to just really be able to show my love and affection and adoration for the people in my life, I feel like it's already inherently queered because it's already so fraught.
Absolutely. I'm so glad we get to talk to you about this today. I'm like very excited. And it makes sense with all this love of love that you are a love poet. Can you tell us about the different kinds of love you write about?
Absolutely. So my first book, Slingshot, is about erotic love. It is very erotic. It is also about like loving people and not knowing whether or not love should be a feeling or an action. And like the protagonist in Slingshot in Machine of Mahogany and Bronze is very caught up on feelings of passion and really feels like that is the essence of love, and to the detriment of his own ability to love other people through his actions and through his commitments. Especially the people in his family, right? Because love can be very difficult in so many different ways, right? Even like thinking about like queering Valentine's Day or whatever, it's like, well, if you have like a very complex relationship with your parents, right? Like how does love get crossed up there? Like if you have a very complex relationship with yourself, how does love get crossed up there? And that's really what I look at in Watch Night, is like more familial love. There's some familial love or lack of love in Slingshot, but Watch Night is really a book about wanting love from family and having to create families that love you. And so I think that has been on my mind. Yeah, like thinking about what kinds of love can survive the rise of fascism, the continuation of fascism is really close to my heart.
Yeah, love inhabits so many different dimensions of our lives. And I think that exploring that through poetry is so interesting. And I've always thought of poetry as like the queerest corner of writing. It's like the smaller percentage of an overall culture of writing. It usually has its own spaces. It's something you know exists, but you might struggle to find out how to build community around it. And like kind of in a joking way, it's something a lot of people explore in college, you know? So I guess with those sort of associations in mind, what are your thoughts on poetry as a queer medium or maybe just inherently queer?
Yeah, I do think poetry is inherently queer. I don't think many things are inherently queer either. Like I'm not that way. I did like things you experiment in college. I was a queer theory undergrad. Yes, thought about a lot about that. But I think what makes poetry queer is like the fact that it's inherently spiritual, right? Like I personally think genre is kind of fake, but I think form is very real. And choosing brevity when the fashionable style is length, it like just creates lots of possibilities to choose to be outside of what society values. Society does not value poetry, right? It is a feminized art form. It is an outsider art form, even when you are on the inside. When you look at the history of poetry, just generally, like, poets are often living on the fringes. And that's just, that's sort of where we belong, right? The poetry of insiders often is even like, outsiders are inside. I think that that's something that I've always been struck with, like Lord Byron or Oscar Wilde, where it's like, you are inside of English society. Y'all are like rich people, people who are coming from families that are doing fine, that are not enslaved, right? You're finding yourself still on the outside, right? Because, you know, Lord Byron, in addition to being kind of an asshole, you know, he has this limp. He has this club foot. And, you know, he's bi. And Oscar Wilde, for all accounts, is, you know, bi as well and imprisoned because of it, right? So even when you are an insider, there's just like this constant act of negotiating how to speak to everyone from the farthest corner of society.
Well, today we're going to get into your poetry a bit, and we're going to start with an erotic poem from your book Slingshot called Doppelganger. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about it before you read it.
Sure. Doppelganger is exactly what it says. There's nothing there's nothing complex about doppelganger. It is about wanting to fuck somebody in a motel and fucking someone in a motel. That's what it's about. And about wondering if you know your lover, just like wondering if you'll ever know your lover, if they're even knowable. Right. Like, I really believe that, like, people are fundamentally unknowable. And I also believe that life imitates art. I think that this poem was an attempt, like a lot of poems, the most erotic poems in Slingshot are attempts to create some space for the way that I, as a trans fag, love, right? Like, there's just not that many depictions of people like me. There's just not that much art and that much conversation about people like myself. And I think that it actually forecloses upon the possibility because life imitates art. And so this is one more of my attempts in Slingshot. Doppelganger. Queer utopians think human beings are perfectible, but we are not. We're just correctable. In an hourly motel, I recall that Kim Adonisio poem about tattoos and ask you how many you have, although I count 14 every time you doze and add your spit to the mysterious stains on the pillows, but the ink proliferates in twilight's sticky gold. Is a cover-up one or two or three tattoos, and how many about your forced disappearances? And how many about the appearance of manhood? And how many about being a man with his face buried in pillows, a short black man hydroplaning down our impossible? I hate how much I love when you suck my toes, and I despise you for making me beg. That's why I can't know you. That's why I stay perpetually ahead of your judgment. You look just like me when I'm fucking you from behind. I'll suck that shrimp cock to the glove pop plus one extra watt before I figure it out. I don't know God anymore, but let's stay here on our knees and wait for him to come.
I wanted to talk about this idea of a doppelganger because, you know, you said that the idea of a doppelganger is really simple. And I was also just thinking about how, like, the idea of being with a doppelganger or someone who looks like you is such a queer trope of dating. People fall into that trap a lot. So I guess with that perspective, could you talk more about what you're thinking when you're writing a poem about a doppelganger of somebody?
Yeah, well, the thing about a doppelganger is you're not supposed to see your own. You'll die. That's like a harbinger of death. In fact, I'm trying to remember who it was. Like, there is a poet whose wife saw his doppelganger while he was at sea, and he was dead, like, soon thereafter. Like, people see their doppelgangers, they pass away. And I think that for me, it's about fear of being seen, right? You don't want somebody to see you as you are, right? You don't, like, you regard it as, like, imperiling. And I think, well, the person I wrote this poem about certainly felt like it was imperiling, right? And so really thinking about, like, what does it mean to be seen, right? It's not like, you know, we talk about good representation or bad representation, right? But, like, the feeling of being seen is uncomfortable. It's not fun. It isn't fun. And I think that, like, you know, some of, like, the queer, like, doppelganger trope comes from the extreme beauty standards that queers live under, right? So, like, where it's like, I like you because you look like me, and that means I look good. I'm attracted to you, right? And I think that in queer community, having a beautiful partner can become a status symbol in a way that feels very toxic. Like having a partner who society believes is beautiful, right? Who's like jacked or tall enough or, you know, looks a certain way, has a certain body type, can be such a status symbol for people that it can be, I think, a little gross. I think that that's one of the, you know, I don't have a personal identity as queer. I'm gay. Like, I guess, like, literally, like many gay people, I am bi. But like, you know, on a day-to-day basis, queer is not something I identify with. Like, I'm not being like, yes, as a queer person, that's something way that you're supposed to refer to me. And I think in part because, like, I really do think queerness is something we're striving to be, right? We're striving to live in a world where, you know, gender isn't the primary factor on which people are judged or oppressed, right? Like, that, where everyone can love the way that they want to love and live the way that they want to live. I don't think we live in that kind of world. I don't. I think that, like, there are so many barriers to love. And I think that, you know, not identifying as, you know, capital Q queer is one of the ways I remind myself that there is so far to go. The way that we talk about looking for one another or falling in love is so rarely, you know, so rarely meets the aspirations set up by the term queer, that I think that really closely looking at each other and really wanting to please each other and, you know, not to be religious, but I am religious, you know, seeing God in each other is like about as close as I can get, right? And I think that, you know, Slingshot really regards the erotic as religious, really does regard love as a religious and spiritual experience. And I think most of my work does, because that's what I believe.
Yeah, the desirability politics of the queer community are quite intense. And I appreciate you bringing that layer into this conversation. You've done a lot of activism around sexuality, and Sins Invalid, a disability justice-based performance project you're a part of, looks at the taboo of disabled pleasure, embodiment, and eroticism quite directly. So I'm wondering if you could continue to speak to the power of eroticism in a political context.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Sin started out as a disability sexuality project. So it's definitely something close to my mind. In college, I was a sexual, you know, sexuality educator, particularly for lesbians at the time. And I would give these workshops. And I think that, like, the less information you have about what sex is supposed to look like for you, I think the better sex you probably have. And I think that's part of the problem that straight people seem to have is that, like, they have, like, their ideas of sex can be so prescriptive that, like, nobody's having any fun and everybody's really worried about how they look and, like, who's looking at them and, like, whether or not they're doing it right and what they don't want to, you know, like, and what they don't want to be known to do and, like, what other people do, right? And I think that queers are actually very lucky that we don't have as many of those prescriptions, because it makes sexuality a little more adventurous and specific. And as a disabled person, I think no one knows better than disabled people all the different ways that sex can look. Like, I remember on Twitter, there, like, was this elastic chair, this chair with, like, you know, this stool with elastic bands over it. And people were like, why would I ever need that for sex? And it's like, what about want? What about wanting it for sex, right? Like, what about, like, what if it makes your experience 2% better and that 2% was exactly what you need? And I think that that is such a disabled approach to sex, right? Like, I think about, like, the length of a handle on a Hitachi magic wand. In fact, I believe the, like, modern dildo was invented by a Black cis disabled man. You know, like, it is, like, we are always benefiting by from technology meant for disabled people.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
welcome back. I want to turn back to the poem for a second because I love the opening lines so much about being perfectible versus correctable, and the phrase queer utopians really jumped out at me. So I was wondering if you could tell us, like, who are queer utopians in your mind's eye and how love connects to this idea of being correctable.
Yeah, absolutely. I love thinking about queer utopians. And, you know, I am a utopian. Absolutely, I'm a utopian. In fact, the town where I was born was, an intentional community at one point called the Farrer Colony, like a utopian project where people left the city and moved to farmy New Jersey to figure shit out, right? So, like, I was born with that kind of spirit. But when I think of utopians, it's just, like, people who want the world to be perfect. And I think the world will never be perfect, but I do think that we should do whatever we can to improve our lives and the lives of others. Like, I really do. And I also think that we have to have measures for when human beings fall short of their tallest aims. And so some of that is in that poem too, right? Like, how much of your bullshit is about being a man? Like, how much of it is about the spaces you're not allowed to inhabit because of how people view you as a Black man, right? Like, how much of it is you limiting yourself? I'm a non-binary person, right? Like, I think that my relationship with gender is very complex. And I was raised by masculinity, so I always knew that was not me, right? Like, I was raised by, I guess you would call, like, gender non-conforming masculinities in lesbian community. And, you know, like, they were just so masculine. They were more masculine than any men that I've still ever met, right? Like, just very, very masculine people. And I always knew that was just not going to be me. I was like, I will be a disappointment to this. And so, like, as someone who is a lover of men and masculinities and also femininities too, I'm always struck by how chained up my male partners seem. It's just like, oh, this is holding you down. Like, oof. But also it's like holding you up too. And so thinking about the ways that, you know, some of the stuff that gets said in, like, again, you know, capital Q queer community now about, like, masculinity, like, sometimes it's like, oh, like, you think, like, men and masculinities is, like, a title that makes sense any more than women and femmes, you know, like, neither of those formations make any fucking sense, in my opinion. But I think that we can say that, like, the regional character, I guess, of, like, masculinity, you know, in my community, at least, in my Black community, in my genderqueer community, in my gender conforming community, my trans masculine community, trans male community. Sometimes it's like, damn, this is making you a lot better. But sometimes it's like, damn, this is making you a lot fucking worse, you know? And, like, how do we love on masculinities, love on men, while simultaneously be better? In the same way, like, how do we love on cis people, right? I think all the time, like, how do I love on the cis femmes in my community while simultaneously being like, stop being a fucking transphobe. You're fucking transphobic and you're making my life bad. And, like, this rhetoric has material consequences for people, while simultaneously being like, wow, like, you're wonderful and I love you. Like, how do we hold those things for each other without, like, lifting one up to an impossible height, right? The parts that we like, oh my God, they're just so transformative and magical and perfect. And the parts that we hate, you have to get out of here. It's either a pedestal or disposal. There's nothing in between. And we kind of pick out who's going to be on that pedestal and who's always going to be good and right, and, like, who we want to just kick out entirely, instead of seeing our community as imperfect and each and every one of us as needing compassion, correction, and care. But we don't think that. And, you know, a lot of that is, like, certainly transmisogyny, certainly transphobia, and, like, folks who experience transphobia who may not even identify as trans. And so thinking about what it is like to love people who live outside of what politics says is good, including queer politics, what it means to be in community with others in a way that isn't full of pedestals and ego is something that my writing concerns. I don't claim that I know how to get it right or that, you know, that I am the one who is perfect. But I think that, in fact, I think that part of my writing is an exercise in stripping myself of excess ego. Like, really thinking about, like, in what ways am I imperfect? You know, like, in what ways am I not doing this well? Like, in what ways can my work be more considered? And I actually think that that's something that shows up very strongly in my writing, and is, like, my own failures. And my own imperfections.
Yeah, that's very real. It may be a little obvious to bring up All About Love by bell hooks on Valentine's Day, but I think reading that was the first time my views on love were really challenged. So for listeners who haven't yet read it, the seminal Black feminist text breaks down the concept of love, defines it, and explores the many ways love can exist in our lives. And I was wondering, Saray, what kinds of art or poetry or writing has challenged your ideas about love?
I say this all the time. Everyone should be reading Sharon Bridgeforth. If you're queer and you're listening to this, please read Sharon Bridgeforth. A genius. So absolutely love Contour Blues. It is about a tight-knit post-enslavement community of queer and trans people who are just loving on each other imperfectly and well and in every single kind of way. And I think it's so beautiful. What a beautiful work. Who else has changed my view of love? Toni Morrison, of course. I think Toni Morrison has probably done more for my understanding of love. I had a close friend from high school and after pass away last year. And I read Sula twice in like a day. I was just like, Sula now. And when I think of Sula, right, that's definitely a book about loving imperfect people, right? Like Sula Pease, look, justice for Nell, because Sula Pease is not a nice person. Like she watched her mama burn up. She watched a bunch of people just pass away. And she was like, this is interesting. But like ultimately, I think that that character figures there's going to be some point in her life that comes where she can just experience normal love. And when she finds out that she can't, she decides she's going to die. I think that that's so real, right? Like that level of vulnerability, you know, like I think that's so relatable. Also, the book Love by Toni Morrison. I think that's the one where they're sitting up in the house eating shrimp and they're just like, I hate you, but you can't leave and I'm not leaving. So we're just going to sit here hating each other until the end of time. I think that that's how a lot of people's loves go. And I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting more, but like sometimes that's just what the fuck it looks like. Sometimes that's just what it looks like to really love somebody. Unfortunately, is sometimes it's like, well, I'm just gonna have to endure the parts where this isn't as true until we get back to love, or that there's love contained even in that non-love. What else? I feel like there's like so much.
Those are some amazing recommendations to get folks started. And I think about Toni Morrison or bell hooks, who I was talking about earlier, and just like a lot of feminist Black work revolving around love and community and the collective. And so I was wondering, what role has community played in learning or relearning about love for you?
Oh, that's such a good question. So the book Watch Night is about a watch night party that I had for years and years and years, where I just like grabbed every Black queer trans person around me. I was like, come on, it's New Year's Eve. It's time for watch night. And in part, that was because I love to party, you know, pandemic, so less now. But like, you know, like back in the day, I loved to party. And I knew that I wasn't going to be cooking on New Year's Day. So everything had to be done on watch night. Everything had to be done. And so it was my way of making sure everything was done to the point where it rewired in my head as that's when we do it, you know, growing up in the church. And, you know, I grew up African Methodist Episcopalian. My great grandmother was a mother of the church. My grandmother was a church nurse. So watch night. As a kid, you were sitting in church. You were sitting in church. You were praying. You were tarrying, right? Like that was what you did on watch night. And so, you know, the love and trust that all of these Black queer and trans people must have had for me, like, I'll come to your watch night party. I trust you enough to come to your watch night party and not think I'm going to get prayed over, called to the altar, right? I trust you. I love you enough to come to this, right? Even if we weren't the closest of friends, right? Like many Black queer and trans people with a fair amount of church trauma trusted me enough to come to my watch night party. And, you know, a lot of people said to me over those years, I didn't know what it was going to be. I didn't know what was going to be. And yeah, that was so special to me. I'm not very social. Like I have a pretty low social need. I'm autistic. And so social situations can be awkward for me. But it was always a time where I was like, oh, like this is a practice that I do in community, not just the party, but like everything around it. It's like, this is something that I do with my community. This is something that I do in community. This is a way that I practice my faith in community with the people immediately around me. And that always just meant so much to me. It always made me feel so loved.
Yeah, I think that's a really wonderful way into this next poem you have for us, Old Familiar. I'll let you take it away.
Okay, Old Familiar. When watch night breaks and we're all still together. When the cobweb shadow is sucked from the corners of last year and the house glossed in easy tomorrows, we eat and we become a single thing? Forgetting the turn of the card so far behind us as to be before us again. Tonight, we will make new promises, make love all night, then lose our tempers, drink to sway. Fuck all night and not be sweet about it neither, just to be together. And if this one texts an ex or falls off the wagon again, if we forget the slip of your sweet and light of your corners, it's no such thing. We'll come back to love. We'll turn to you and listen to your song tonight, and tomorrow we'll find a way to retire the habit. Apologize tomorrow, and so sincerely as to flush the hurt. We people of night runs to wood panel liquor stores, people of been turned out experience, people of sweat, people of put together then disheveled come morning, joy dotting each corner as we walk home in or with our finest. Next year, again. Next year, I'll plant the special morning glories drip again in a once weed-owned stamp of dirt, save seed for tomorrow in smug assumption it will come, and it will come. Corners pressing out the old ways, evil or divine, multiplying like night across the meridian. The sap that snaps us each together, the vast drumbeat of gravity that hems us up each in turn. Next year, we'll learn to ride it in our stirrups, ankles turning, steer us past the futile present. So what, you got drunk again? Next year, we'll meet up after the meetings, work it out together. We are your community. We love you. Call me late tomorrow or whenever. I know that the hardest part can be the nights. Maybe you don't feel it yet, but I think you turned the corner. Hark, the new year in sequins ringing her bell in the corner of the sweat-fogged room. The clock hands kiss, you turn to face me, your lips a blush across my neck until the night answers twilight's questions, then snore in wait of night again. Might as well sleep. You'll head to work at dawn tomorrow. I'll watch your eyes flicker in the cold room, let's stay together. I wasn't sure, but now I'm certain. I see you and love your corners. Thank you for spending New Year's with my people, their skin turned glow in faint streetlight. My people, whose glory rivals the night.
Thanks so much for joining us today. And before we go, do you have any words for the lovers out there?
You know, like, keep at it. I think that, you know, things can be transient, but like, why not keep going? Why not love other things? Why not love the trees? Why not love the earth? Why not love a pet? Why not love yourself? Why not love your ancestors? Why not love an idea? Why not love your art, right? Why not? Why not love? There's no good reason, I think.
Saray Jarrell Johnson is a poet and writer based in New York. They have a new book, Watch Night, coming out later this year. Saray, where can listeners find you and your work?
I am online on Instagram at Collective Cardamancy. I'm on Twitter and TikTok as Saray Jarrell.
All right, folks. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Outward. We're gearing up for another advice episode, and this time we're covering your poly questions. Send yours to outwardpodcast@slate.com. And please send us feedback, topic ideas at outwardpodcast@slate.com or via Facebook or X at Slate Outward. And just a reminder, by joining Slate Plus, you'll get ad-free podcasts, extra segments on shows like Working, and you'll never hit a paywall on the Slate site. To learn more, go to slate.com/outwardplus. Our show was produced by me with help from senior supervising producer Daisy Rosario. If you like Outward, please subscribe in your podcast app, tell your friends about it, and rate and review the show so others can find it. Goodbye, everybody. Stay gay.
The new Starz series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true, but shockingly, it is. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villiers sets her handsome and charming son George on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. The show is full of wit, scandal, action. You won't be able to look away. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.